Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
Friday edition of Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack, and hey, you heard me say Friday, right?
Start spreading the news.
Oh, and you know that music means Schomburg Stu is here with me. How you doing, Stu?
I'm doing okay. Oh, Blue Eyes sounds pretty good.
Yeah, for a minute there, I didn't think it was going to play. But all right, if you'd like to call into the podcast, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, the blogs go up there on Wednesdays and Saturdays, so look for something popping up there sometime tomorrow morning. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, go ahead and hit that link, get yourself over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like it while you're over there, well, hey, we greatly appreciate that. But don't forget, we also have the Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, sadly, we still haven't gotten Stu on Twitter yet, but feel free to reach out to me at Burke Time, and I will forward any messages you have for Stu, good, bad, or indifferent. So, all right, well, what's going on?
Well, I see Mr. Bauer is in a little bit of trouble, but I guess there's not going to be any fines or penalties as far as I know.
Yeah, you know, I didn't see anything announced. Did you see what they what they said or what they did? Because I was kind of wondering the same thing. You know, and what Stu mentioned is, you know, Major League Baseball said they want to do cut down on pitchers putting substances on the baseball, and apparently they pulled a few of the baseballs, I don't know the exact number, that Trevor Bauer used in a couple of his starts, and they are investigating them.
Nothing has been stated as to whether there will be any penalties or not, but it doesn't look like anything's going to happen. Except maybe he'll be under closer observation the next time he pitches.
Yeah, because I don't remember, like, what the, you know, I don't think they announced any penalties or anything, did they, for they were doing with pitchers, so, you know, I was just kind of like, oh, okay. You know, the humorous thing is I have him on, like, every single one of my fantasy teams this year, so it kind of figures this is the year they crack down on him, right? Because I have him.
Yeah, and just your luck that something will happen, and one of your top names will be taken off the board for a while.
Yeah, so far, you know, out of the gate, I've been pretty lucky. You know, I haven't lost any, with the exception of the home run league where I lost Eloy Jimenez right before, you know, that happened. But here, maybe this has something to do with it. I found an article on it, and it says that if the league attempts to punish Bauer, the union would challenge any discipline not covered under current rules. And I don't think there's anything in this CBA about the baseballs. So I don't know if they can dish out any kind of punishment to him.
It doesn't look like they can at the moment. And I did tell you the story, maybe on the air one time, about what I saw one time, the only time I've ever seen it happen, when Phil Regan was pitching for the Cubs. Did I mention that to you?
Probably, but you could tell us again.
Well, real quickly, when Phil Regan, called the Vulture, was a top-notch relief pitcher for the Cubs, they got him from the Dodgers, and I believe the Cubs were playing, I'm not sure if Rose is now playing for Philadelphia or was it since I think it was Philadelphia. Anyway, he threw a good-looking curveball that dipped into the plate and struck out Rose. And Rose complained immediately to the umpire, who asked to see the ball. And then he asked to look inside Regan's glove and his hat. And there was some substance in his hat. And it was hot on the field. And Don Kessinger, the shortstop, was saying, "Hey, my hat's sweaty too. Take a look." And the umpire said, "No pitch." He actually rescinded the strikeout and gave Rose another swing. And he probably got a hit to right field. But that's the only time in all the time I've been watching baseball, and, you know, that's a long, long time, that I've ever seen an umpire do that.
Yeah, I've never seen that done before. And like the humorous thing, and now, you know, there's no way to prove that Trevor Bauer was the one who doctored the baseball. You know, it's possible that, you know, there was a clubhouse guy, or, you know, it could be another player on the field. You know, there's millions of ways to do it. But the humorous thing about it was, you know, he's a big social media guy. He's very popular. He's out there all the time. After, I believe it was 2018, he called the Astros pitchers hypocrites and cheaters. And those are quotes. I'm not making those up. Because, you know, they have increased their – when a pitcher goes to Houston, his spin rate increases evidentially, or whatever the heck I'm trying to say there. And it's kind of fishy that goes on there. So he pointed it out, and again, he used the words hypocrites and cheaters, I believe, in one of his social media posts. It might have been last year. So it would be kind of humorous if all of a sudden he's doctoring baseballs and he's calling other people out for it.
Yeah, that would be a bit hypocritical, right, to my way of thinking. And we'll see if this story has legs. Do you think it's going to continue for the foreseeable future, or do you think it will die down quickly?
No, you know, I think like his next start, he'll probably be watched very carefully, you know, and they'll want to make sure, you know, that he's not doing anything funny and blah, 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 and all that stuff. And, you know, with the fact that there's really nothing they can do except throw the balls out of play, I guess, that, you know, if the umpires catch him with something, they could throw him out of the game. But, you know, he seems like a smart enough guy to not do that. So we'll see.
Plus, he has enough stuff, good stuff, great stuff, not to even have to worry about doing something like that. I don't think he needs to do it.
So, we'll see what happens, but I don't expect much. And then we did have some other struggling pitching news here. I saw that James Paxton, who came out of his first start with the Mariners after just 1 1/3 inning because he was hurting, it's been recommended that he have Tommy John surgery, so that will end this season and part of next season for him. You know, it's kind of odd how things kind of developed for him. You know, he had two really good, strong years for the Mariners in, you know, 2017 and 2018. He got a big money deal for the Yankees and went there. You know, he was 15-6 in 2019 with a 3.82 ERA. Last year he got hurt, only pitched in 5 games, just 20 1/3 innings. This year his season's going to end after just 1 game and 1 1/3 inning. You know, he's just 32 years old. You've got to wonder what goes on with these guys that they just can't stay healthy. And now we're talking about a pitcher who's never made 30 starts in a year, so he's always had injury concerns, but these last 2 years have been devastating for him. And I just don't know why.
We've talked about this before, and I still can't put my finger on why this type of injury seems to be so prevalent nowadays.
Yeah, you know, I'm so baffled by, with all the advancements they've made in physical therapy and the way players work out and, you know, all the things they've done, that they haven't found a way to not only haven't found a, they have not found a way to convict, treat this. It seems like we're getting more of them.
Yeah, that's the odd thing, as far as I'm concerned, too. Why so many of them? And
so,
what happened
to
these guys? If there was no Tommy John surgery available, would they have to retire from baseball?
Yeah, their careers would just be over. That's what used to happen. When a pitcher blew out his arm before Tommy John surgery, his career was just over. You know, I mean, they would try to rehab and all that other kind of stuff, but there's no, you know, there's no coming back from that.
No, and boy, it certainly seems like there's been a lot of them over the years, over the last 10 years at least, if not longer than that.
Yeah, there's multiple ones, you know, and then the other odd part, and again, this makes no sense to me, is it actually takes longer now to return from the injury than it did originally. And again, we have all these advances in physical therapy and kinesiology or whatever you want to call it. And, you know, some guys, I believe it's Zach Wheeler, 2 years. He missed 2 full seasons recovering from Tommy John. And that's, you know, the thought of that is just crazy.
Yeah, I always thought it was around a year, maybe 14, 15 months. But now it seems to be longer than that before they're ready to go.
So, yeah, I just don't get it, you know. It's baffling when I hear it and they're like, oh, yeah, well, he's going to be gone until, you know, 18 months. And like, 18 months? What did they do that it takes him 18 months to get ready to come back? So,
and what happens after the surgery and the surgery is successful? How many innings are they let him pitch? Is he going to be on a pitch count for the whole season? Maybe at 95 innings? What would they do then after the guy comes back from successful Tommy John surgery?
Well, you know, sadly, everybody's on a pitch count now, so he, you know, it would be some kind of pitch count.
I'm sure. Yeah, it's interesting.
You know, but we did
count. Years ago, they never had that, right? You would know. When a guy pitched a complete game, and, he wound up with 140 pitches, but you wouldn't find out the exact number until after the game was over.
Yeah, I read somewhere, and I don't remember the exact number, but Juan Marichal pitched a complete game that went like 15 or 16 innings and threw, I think it was close to 300 pitches.
That's unbelievable.
And you look at what these guys used to do, and they never had arm problems. And now these guys, you know, everything hurts their arm.
Yeah. You remember when Wilbur Wood pitched both games of a doubleheader?
Yeah. You know, yeah, he started both games. Here you go, you know. And, you know, like I was waiting for somebody to say something last night because, you know, Lance Lynn pitched a complete game shutout for the White Sox. And I think he got close to 115 pitches or so.
I think he wound up with 111, you know, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was 111, but that's pretty close to 115. But he looked very strong. He looked very strong, didn't he?
Yeah. He looks a little chunky to me, too,
the guy. He doesn't look like a real pitcher. I mean, he looks a little bit out of shape, but I guess he's not.
Yeah, well, you know, there are guys who like to start the season out heavier because they lose that weight as the season goes on. Yeah, you're right. He threw 111 pitches last night. 79 of them were strikes. So there you go. But, that's a kind of a no-no in today's game now. I mean, I'm trying to remember who I heard talking about it. They were like, well, you know, it's his first start of the season, so he probably won't even get to 100 pitches. It wasn't Lance Lynn. It was somebody else on opening day. And I was just like, didn't they just go through spring training to get ready to do this? What were they doing?
Yeah. Well, of course, Lynn had the great advantage yesterday with the weather conditions being what they were.
Yeah. So yeah, that always helps. But hey, the White Sox scored and they hadn't hit in the same weather. So
that's true.
You know,
it
didn't stop from going almost 500 feet.
No, they played a strong game. Of course, they weren't playing a top-notch team either.
Well, Kansas City been playing pretty well to start off. They've been scoring a lot of runs. For Lynn to shut them out was, you know, pretty good deal.
It was impressive. And I see, by the way, that Soler is off to a very slow start with Kansas City this year.
Yeah, I think he's probably the only one in the lineup not hitting. They've been scoring like 6 or 8 runs a game. So you'd think, you know, everybody would be hitting, but apparently he's having his scuffles right now. But it's kind of a strange Friday in baseball because there are actually only 9 games on the schedule. So it's a little weird that teams are off on a Friday. We do have one final already. The Tampa Bay Rays beat the New York Yankees 10-5. Former Cub great Rich Hill got the win. Corey Kluber took the loss. The other two games rolling on right now, the Rockies, the Colorado Rockies and San Francisco Giants are actually 0-0 in the top of the seventh. And the Los Angeles Dodgers are ahead of the Washington Nationals 1-0. That game's going into the eighth inning. The rest of the schedule kind of goes like this. You got the Angels at the Blue Jays, which is actually in Florida. The Tigers at the Indians, the Phillies at the Braves, the Padres at the Rangers. The A's are at the Astros, and the Reds are at the Diamondbacks, and that's it for tonight.
Yeah, both Chicago teams are off tonight.
Yeah.
Is a reason for that, by the way.
Yeah.
Normally what happens, a lot of teams do this. For opening day, they will not schedule a game the next day in case there's a rainout.
Yeah.
So that's why you see when a team opens up on a certain day, the next day they won't be playing just in case there's a rainout for opening day.
Yeah, I know any teams that open on the East Coast, they always do that. The West Coast teams, you know, they'll play back-to-back because you can count on the weather a little more. But, you know, like whoever opens out East always gets that next day off. And it's worked into the schedule. It's just odd that it's a Friday and there are only 9 games. So
we'll have to rely on other sports tonight to pique our interest.
Yeah. And then I don't know if you came across this one yesterday, but did you happen to see how the Mets won their game against the Marlins?
Yeah, on a hit batter.
Yeah. Well, technically it was a hit batter, but it really was a strike. If you watch the highlight, the ump is ready to ring him up for strike 3 before he realizes that he hit his elbow guard, which he conveniently stuck out over the plate so he'd get hit. So
yeah,
I don't know how
that was an illegal move by the batter, and he should have been out on strikes. In fact, the umpire today agree that he made a mistake by not calling him out on strikes.
He did say after the game that he blew it, and he should have called him out. So
well, it's too late now though to do anything about it.
Yeah, you know, nothing you can do, you know, now that you've made the call. So, you know, but yeah, it was just kind of cheap. You know, it's the only way I can really think of it, you know, to describe it. And, you know, I mean, I won't be surprised. I think they're off tonight as well, but they're probably playing tomorrow. I won't be surprised if Michael Conforto gets drilled for doing that. So
it wouldn't surprise me either. And of course, you don't see that as much in today's baseball as you did in years past.
No, you know they definitely don't do that like they used to. So,
but sometimes if certain teams do. Certain teams when they play each other for some reason that gets the into a very volatile situation. For example, I believe that St. Louis and Cincinnati have a history of animosity when they play.
Yeah, they've they've had one lately. Like this one, I still don't really understand what Nick Castellanos was really thinking, because I didn't think they were throwing at him, but he thought they did, and that's all that it takes. Just like, oh, okay, well, here we go. So
yeah, the actual altercation started when he slid into the home plate and said something to the pitcher. Didn't that trigger things?
That's because he was a moron. You know, if he'd have just kept his mouth shut, it all would have went away. And, you know, that's what he ended up being suspended for. I heard a bunch of people crying about him being suspended. And it's like the reason he got suspended was because he instigated. And that's going to get punished. So.
And he didn't challenge a suspension. I thought maybe he was a challenger and they would cut it down from 2 games to 1. But I don't think he did that.
Well, he did, and then I think he may have decided just to sit out. I know he's in their lineup tonight, so one of those things. But here I found a baseball story you can really relate to. I saw that Gio Urshela, the Yankees third baseman, is being held out of the lineup tonight because he's having side effects from the COVID vaccine.
Yeah, that's right. I noticed that also. And as I think I pointed out to you in email, I felt a little out of sorts yesterday about a day after I had my mine. But I'm going to tell you right now, it wasn't that bad that it wouldn't have prevented me from sucking up and playing anyway.
Yeah, you wondered what he had that he ended up sitting out. But, whatever it was, he missed the game. And the game's already been played, obviously. They're the one final. All they did was, they shuffled DJ LeMahieu over to third base and Tyler Wade played second. So they were able to cover up for him. So
didn't do him much good though.
No, just one of those things. But, I was surprised when I was looking at the stats for that game. I mentioned Rich Hill got the win, but he actually went 6 innings. And that's something that Tampa Bay, not only Rich Hill, but Tampa Bay pitchers rarely do. I was just kind of like, wow, they let him go that long.
Yeah, and boy, he's in his 40s now, Hill, correct? I mean, he's been around a long time. And I could never figure out how he's so successful. He doesn't look like he has all that great stuff to me, but somehow he's quite effective, and he's had a long, long career in the major leagues.
Yeah, and he has had what you would definitely call an interesting road, through this career that he's had. He spent time in the independent league and just all over the place trying to make his way back after, was it the Cubs? Might have been, the Orioles or wherever he ended up going after the Cubs. He really bounced around and, found himself all over the place. So it's worked out in the end pretty well for him.
Yeah, and he's been in the majors now for a long time, though, after he bounced around. He's been back for many, many years.
Yeah. Well, he made his debut in 2005 with the Cubs. So, he's been in the majors basically ever since then, as long as he was with a team. There was a year here or there where he wasn't on a major league roster. He somehow worked his way back, and it worked out. He spent a year in the International League and played in the Carolina League and Venezuela Winter Ball and all over the place. But yeah, I think even he played a season in the Atlantic League. So. Whatever he could do to pitch, and he kept trying, and it's, you know, it's turned into a very long career for him. And
it really
let me
has.
Double check. He just turned 41 last month.
Yeah, so I wonder how much longer he can keep going. Of course, he doesn't throw too many fastballs, so he could maybe go a couple more years at least, I would think.
Well, you know, being left-handed, those guys seem to be able to hang around for whatever reason. You know, teams just continue to, you know, give them jobs. So, you know, we'll have to see if he can be a you know, if he can be one of those guys, and, you know, hey, who knows, maybe he'll, you know, maybe he'll switch over to relievers and become a left-handed specialist like, you know, Oliver Perez did. You know, I don't know if he officially retired, but I know he's not on a roster this year. But, you know, he pitched 18 years in the major leagues.
Yeah, he did.
So,
do you think that the new rule, it's not really a new rule, do you think it's going to curtail the era of the left-handed relief specialist now that they have to face three batters?
You know, I wondered that, but it doesn't seem to have slowed it down too much. You know, I think the managers are a little more picky about who they're bringing these guys in to face. So, you know, it may help them out a little bit that way. But, yeah, I think, you know, for most part, they're still, you know, bringing them in set situations. Of course, you know, now instead of having to get just that one left-handed hitter, you got to get three guys out.
Yeah.
Or you got to at least face them.
So the manager has to be pretty picky about when he brings a guy in. Considering after he gets the first guy out, the left-handed hitter, does he have to face two righties next? And that has
yeah,
to
enter into
thinking,
to.
I would think.
Yeah. You know, that's kind of where, you know, you just got to, you know, you got to kind of set things up so he's facing, you know, maybe he faces two lefties, and you just got to hope it's somebody they're not going to pinch hit for.
Yeah, exactly right.
So, you know, that's what always makes it, you know, makes it a little difficult to kind of figure out how it, you know, how it goes or how it's going to work out. But, yeah, you know, you're like, well, here we go. So.
And I'm wondering if it actually speeds up the game, and if so, what, a minute? Instead of three hours and 34 minutes, it's 3 hours and 33?
Yeah, on average, games took longer last year, so it didn't do anything to speed up the game.
You know, of course, last year was a strange season to begin with, and I'm wondering if the fact that only were 60 games affected how long a game would take place and some strange rules, and it was a crazy season all the way around.
Yeah, well, you know, and then with no fans in the ballpark, there's no real hurry. You know, there's no reason to rush through anything because, you know, part of the reason they're doing this is they're convinced the fans don't like the longer games, even though it's really the media that doesn't like the longer games because they want to get out of the ballpark as fast as they can. So, yeah, I don't think it really, really matters. So...
Does an average game take at least 3 hours now, would you think? I mean, anything under three hours is... Yeah, well, you know, we know there are exceptions. Like when Mark Burley pitched, of course, his games would always end over a lot sooner than most other pitchers. But that doesn't seem to be the norm anymore.
No, you know, not very few pitchers work quickly. You know, I can't remember what game I was watching yesterday, but there was a runner on second, and, you know, the pitcher ended up stepping off the mound like three times because he couldn't get the signal straightened out with the catcher. So it was just kind of like, okay, well, this is, you know, I mean, it literally took 5 minutes for him just to throw one pitch.
Yeah, and is there always a single switch between catcher and pitcher when there's a runner on second base?
You know, there used to be, but from what I've heard now, it's a lot more complicated. You know, teams have really changed up the way they're doing it and the way they're trying to shuffle things around. So I can understand how or why a guy is getting lost, but, you know, who knows?
When you were catching in college and there was a runner on second, did you, as a matter of course, go out and talk to the pitcher about switching things around a little bit?
Yeah, you know, like we talked about what it would be during the game, you know, before the game. But the first time you get a guy out there, you always go out and talk to him just in case he forgot, you know, because the last thing you want is to get crossed up or cross him up, you know, and have him throw something he's not supposed to. So, you know, you always go out then. Of course, you know, now that they're only allowed so many mound visits,
yeah,
I don't know how many still do that.
Yeah, exactly right. And that's got to be tough on the catcher, by the way, when he's crossed up and is expecting a slider or a curve and the pitcher throws a fastball.
Yeah, it can be, you know, very, very rough. You know, it's obviously worse when you're expecting curve and you get fastball because, you know, it's going to get there a lot quicker. So, you know, but luckily it doesn't happen all that often. So that's a big plus.
Yeah, you
with
the coaching now and all the technical advantages that these things don't happen very, very often, I'm sure. Although I have seen it a time or two this season, a couple of cross-ups here and there.
Yeah, you know, you always get them. You know, unfortunately, it's just kind of part of the game. But, you know, with, like, the veteran guys or a quality catcher, you don't get too many. So, you know, it's not too bad of a deal there. It kind of all works itself out. But, you know, we'll see. Maybe we'll see one tonight if I can find some games to watch. So,
well, I'm sure there's something on MLB that will get you interested in watching.
Yeah, they have stuff, and then, you know, I can always stream whatever, you know, I feel like with the MLB app if I want to do that. So, but, you know, well, maybe you can explain this one to me. I saw that they released the report for Tiger Woods' accident. Now, they said the cause of the accident was speeding. Apparently, they estimated he was doing between 84 and 87. You know, they did say he didn't test positive for anything, so that was a good thing. But what I can't figure out is why in the hell didn't they issue any tickets? Because they would have destroyed you or I if that had happened to us.
Not necessarily, because it's my understanding that they couldn't issue a ticket because a policeman didn't see what happened, which kind of confused me, too, when I saw that explanation. So maybe you know more about that than I do. But that's the report I saw. They couldn't do anything about it because they didn't witness the accident.
See, that must be new because I don't I don't remember ever hearing that one. I mean, I've heard plenty of tickets issued after the fact, you know, once they figured out what happened or how it was going. But, you know, I mean, were they afraid that maybe Tiger couldn't afford a couple tickets, you know?
Yeah, you always wonder when something like this happens, and the excuse they give is that, well, the policeman didn't see what happened. Is it because they didn't see what happened, didn't happen, or was it a combination of that and it being Tiger Woods?
Yeah, you know, this was a really odd situation to begin with, the entire way the police handled it. You know, I mean, they made it look like a cover-up from the start. And, you know, it was just odd that, you know, they had to specifically state that he wasn't on anything. We don't think he was on any illegal substances. Well, hell, you don't know that until you get the blood tests back. You know, and just because they released it doesn't mean it's actually correct. So...
And that's a pretty low thing that he did anyway, going that he could have put someone else's life in jeopardy going double the speed limit.
Not a smart move on his part. Luckily he's okay. You know, there were no issues with it or anything, so he's going to recover. Obviously he missed the Masters, which is going on this weekend. And possibly a whole lot of other tournaments, or who knows if he'll ever be able to play again. We'll have to wait and see on that one.
From what I've read, I don't think he's coming back. I think he's done. And those are very severe injuries, fractured ankle and just some terrible, terrible injuries. And I seriously doubt whether or not he'll ever be able to play competitive golf again.
Yeah, see, something tells me he's gonna come back. You know, I don't think we'd ever see him play regularly, but I have a feeling we're gonna see him come back just for certain events. You know, like the Masters, or he does host a tournament. It wouldn't surprise me if he plays in that. What I would be interested in is, you know, he can actually petition the PTA to be allowed to use, or the PTA, the PC, the PGA. He can actually petition them to use a golf cart. So I'd be interested to know if they would allow him to do that.
Yeah, if by any stretch he does come back, I don't. You would think, Matt, it wouldn't be this year. I doubt it.
No. He's a long ways away from coming back. But, yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all if he actually did. So...
Yeah, I still have my doubts about that when I read about how severe those injuries were. But I don't know, today's modern medicine, maybe they can do something and actually get him back on the golf course again, although I'm quite skeptical about that happening. But, you know, there'll be a made-for-TV movie if he does come back.
Yeah, well, they'll definitely be a lot of, you know, he'll get a lot of pub that first first tournament, if he does come back, which would be my guess, would be the one he hosts, because if you're going to get pub for a tournament, you would want it to be yours. So.
And if he does come back, you know the ratings will be off the charts for that one.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody's going to watch. You know, they'll probably, you know, even make sure to carry the first couple rounds, you know, that they genuinely don't, you know, but... If he's playing, I'm sure they would, or at least, you know, cover him one way or the other.
Well, he's certainly got a long road to go back if it ever does happen. But as you pointed out, it's not going to happen this year.
Yeah, no, I won't even be surprised if he doesn't play next year and we don't see him again play until, like, 2022.
Yeah.
I'm
quite sure when I read their police report, they said something about they couldn't issue a ticket because they didn't witness it happening. And I'm not sure, that's kind of a dubious statement to make. And is that accurate? And can, as you pointed out, they have issued tickets in the past when no one witnessed the accident.
Yeah, I don't know if I buy that one. But I did want to run something by you and kind of get your opinion on this just to see what you think here. You know, I mentioned to you that a guy I used to wrestle with put together this 64 wrestler tournament, like the NCAA March Madness deal. And now these were today's matches, and I want to know how you would have voted, and then I'll tell you where the voting stands right now. The first match had Bam Bam Bigelow against R-Truth.
Well, I would have to go with Bam Bam on this one.
All right. Well, you're rolling there. Currently, Bam Bam is up 57-11 in the voting. Then the second one has Scott Hall. He calls him Scott Hall. He doesn't use the Razor Ramon gimmick, but we know him as both guys, obviously. He's matched up against Tajiri. So where does your vote go there?
I'm going to go with the bad guy.
So, yeah, and, you know, so far everybody's agreeing with you. It's Scott Hall's got 58 votes. Tajiri only has 10. This one I found interesting. We have Bob Backlund matched up against RVD, good old Rob Van Dam. Who's your pick there?
I'm going to tell you the legitimate answer. Wow, question, Bob Backlund.
See, now that's what I thought, too, and that's who I voted for today. Oddly, RVD is not only winning this, he's up pretty big. He's got 49 votes. Backlund only has 20. And now before you comment, this last one is even goofier, and I really need you to explain this one to me because I just can't figure this out. This last matchup has Rey Mysterio Jr. against Vern Gagne.
Well, of course, there's no contest on that one. Of course, Vern Gagne would be, which should be the selected wrestler. Are the fans voting for Rey Mysterio in this one?
Well, I went with Vern Gagne. He has 23 votes. Mysterio currently has 57. So
well,
I,
this leads
you know,
me to one thing about the ones who are in the voters had to be very young and know nothing about the older wrestlers involved, and they're picking on people they know. Maybe they'd never heard of Bob Backlund.
Yeah, and, you know, I am kind of wondering that because I just keep thinking to myself, who's voting? You know, because these guys obviously don't know anything about wrestling. You know, maybe today's wrestling, but they're clueless as to, you know, who to vote for in these.
Yeah, how they
so
could possibly
I just,
vote for Rey Mysterio over Vern Gagne is a complete mystery to me.
Yeah, well, you know, and then like I mentioned to you the other day, somehow, and, you know, if you would have seeded a tournament, you know, there's no way Luthez and Buddy Rogers meet in the first round, but somehow they did in this one. You know, and Fez did end up winning. But, you know, like, I know Gorgeous George has already been eliminated. And I'm trying to think if there was anybody else who was an older name that he put in that got knocked out early. But I don't think I've seen any.
Do you remember who eliminated Gorgeous George?
I'm looking for it here to see if I can find it. And I did see here, what did they have here? Samoa Joe did beat Kerry Von Erich. I don't know if that one would have happened. Somehow Rowdy Roddy Piper and Sting ended up meeting up in the first round. And here you go. John Cena beat Nick Bockwinkel.
That's a complete joke right there.
It was Jake Roberts that beat Gorgeous George, and not only did he beat him, he stomped him. He beat him 71-9. So I'm guessing a lot of people voting didn't have no idea who George was.
Yeah, and by the way, he had a great gimmick, Gorgeous George, as we talked about before, that with the pomp and circumstance, he was the first guy to come out with music and throwing the Georgie pins to the crowd. He called them, they were bobby pins. But this guy was a skilled scientific strong amateur wrestler, and if someone like Luthez can give him praise and say this guy knows what he's doing in the ring when you get away from all the hype, well, that tells you a lot.
Yeah, I, you know, like I said, I was going through it and I was just kind of like, who's voting in this that I can't that just doesn't watch wrestling or know wrestling?
They have to be kids because John Cena over Nick Bockwinkel?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. So,
yeah, here's a guy who was, Nick Bockwinkel was one of the most underrated wrestlers in history. Very, very skilled technically, and of course he was trained in part by his father. And also by Lou Fez, gave him some training too. And so, yeah, he wrestled as a heel quite a bit in the AWA, but this guy had skills. Can you tell me that John Cena had legit wrestling skills?
Yeah, no, I don't think so. You know, I mean, you know, like he's not terrible, but he's not Nick Bockwinkel.
No, no. And boy, some of these disparity in the voting too. I mean, you think that even when someone wins at 51-9.
Yeah, that's what I was just kind of wondering, because I'm like, wait, are we not watching wrestling? Are we not paying attention to wrestling? Did we not look into the history of wrestling? I kind of had a feeling that was going to happen.
And you know, in his day, Rob Van Dam had a lot of, you know, he was acrobatic type wrestler, but his skills weren't all that great, but he was quite entertaining to watch. And now, of course, the last few times I saw him wrestle in Impact, he looked like he should retire. He's old and slow.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, time has definitely caught up with him, and it's, you know, it's probably time for him to move on. But, you know, you can't blame him for taking the money. You know,
even in a work sport like wrestling, you can see when the person's skills are eroding. Even Nick Bockwinkel, for example, I thought slowed down considerably in his last few years, even though he wrestled some decent matches. But you could see he wasn't the same wrestler. And I know he wrestled Kurt Hennig to a 60-minute draw, but he was not the same. And I probably never told you this story, but in 1965, I saw Vern Gagne wrestle Lou Fez at the amphitheater when Gagne was the AWA champion, and I was expecting a classic. And I was just, I've never been more disappointed in a match in my life, which went to a no decision, of course, but nowhere close to that great one-hour draw that you can watch now on YouTube. But just, they both were long past their prime, and it really showed in this match.
Yeah, it's tough, you know, and obviously wrestling isn't easy on the body as it is. So you think by the time, you know, guys who did what they did for all those years, you know, probably tough to hold on.
Yeah, and as they say, even in a work sport, it's tough to hold on. And remember that Lou Fez, he was 74 when he had his last match, and that was in Japan. And he wore one of those shirts, or, you know, you couldn't completely cover it, so you didn't see that his body. I'm sure he was that way out of shape, but he lost his last match. But 74, is that even legal to have a 74-year-old man wrestling, even in pro wrestling?
Well, you know, we have seen lately some of the, you know, the older guys get back in the ring. You know, Sting is 61, and Tully Blanchard just wrestled 7. So
in the six man tag, yeah, he didn't do much, but Sting, because of the face paint, looks younger.
Yeah,
that's why he still has a youthful look to him, but only because he's wearing face paint.
But, yeah, you know, and he did lose his first-round matchup to Roddy Piper in this tournament. So that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, another wrestler I always thought was kind of overrated as a skillful pro wrestler was Roddy Piper.
Yeah, he was always came off as more of a brawler to me, and I don't know if that's just because I remember those matches with Greg Valentine so well. But yeah, I don't ever remember him as like a technical wrestler.
No, and a lot of his main event matches never had any kind of a clean finish either.
But, you know, he was really popular, and, you know, that helps.
Yeah, both as a – he was a good heel, and the fans also liked him as a face, too. But, yeah, he swung both ends of the pendulum. And that match against Greg Valentine, although it worked, of course, as we always know, was a vicious match, that dog collar match. I guess he lost some hearing in his ear, and I guess they carried it a little bit too far when they had their last match in the South.
Yeah. So, but all right, well, I don't want to forget here. Let's get some picks in. You did end up splitting last week. The Bulls actually played well against the Jazz, so the Jazz didn't cover the spread. And the baseball team split on you, so you're 22-24. And we are going to start with the NBA. So we got straight up tonight, the Bulls are playing the Atlanta Hawks. The Hawks are actually over 500, 27-25, while the Bulls are 22-28. This would be a big game for the Bulls if they want to find their way into the playoffs here, even as just a play-in team. You got them picking up a win tonight, or are you going with the ATL?
I am going to pick the Bulls in an upset tonight, based on how they've looked lately.
All right, so we will throw that one down. And then tomorrow night we have the Blackhawks, who are 18-18-5, so they are right on the 500 mark. They are taking on the Columbus Blue Jackets, who are 15-19-8. Who wins that game tomorrow?
Boy, that's a tough one, because the Blackhawks have looked so bad lately, and then they can turn it around and play a decent game. Is this game at home, or is this game on the road?
Let me double check. I wanted to say it's in Columbus, but let me check that for you really quick. Well, I shouldn't say really quick, because I have to rely on my internet, and we know how that goes sometimes.
Yeah.
But let me oh wait, it helps if I look at Chicago at Columbus, so they are on the road.
I have not liked the way they've looked lately, so I'm going to have to go with Columbus on this one.
Alright, make sure I write it down so I know who I'm talking about here. And then we will go with the baseball teams on Sunday night. We start with the Cubs have the 12:05 game on Sunday, if they're still in Pittsburgh, of course. It's Trevor Williams against JT Brubaker. So who gets the win there?
I'll go for a Cub win on Sunday.
All right, and then we will have the White Sox as well. They are at home. Still Kansas City. It's Brady Singer for Kansas City against Carlos Rodon for the White Sox. So who you got there?
Well, I guess I'm going to go all Chicago this weekend. I'll go for the White Sox.
The Blackhawks.
Except for the Blackhawks, that's right.
All right. So we will get that all set so I can try to remember to keep track of it and see how you do. So, oh,
you know, are you going to ask me my WrestleMania picks too? If I knew who was
sure.
Wrestling, I would be able to come up with one or two results. But there's some tough ones.
Yeah,
I don't know.
You know, I never, you know, what they're going to do. Well, you know, the main event is the title match with Drew McIntyre and Bobby Lashley, right?
That's a toss-up, right? I don't know. But I like Lashley as a legit title holder, but are they going to give the strap back to McIntyre? What's your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, I don't pay enough attention to what they do to really kind of know where they're going. I would prefer Lashley because, you know, they say, and I don't know how much this still holds true, but, you know, it's always better to have a heel champion with the face chasing. So,
yeah,
you know, as long as you can book well, which is unfortunately something WWE no longer does, and that's WWE, that's Raw and SmackDown. NXT actually does a really good job of booking. But, you know, that would be the route there. But besides McIntyre, I don't know if they have anybody else ready to go after the title.
Probably not. And my thought is that it will be a screw job ending with McIntyre on the verge of winning, but his old friend interferes in the match. Sheamus, that is.
Yeah.
Maybe a ref bump. Isn't that typical booking?
Yeah, you know, I mean, that, you know, you never know with what they're going to, you know, with the way they do things. I mean, they use the same old tired things over and over. So who knows what
exactly
route they'll
right.
go.
Yeah, but
you
I can
know,
watch it
I mean,
if I,
I
want to because I get Peacock now, so I can watch it on the computer at least.
And and I guess technically it starts tonight because they're doing – like the Andre Battle Royal and one of the other matches, I think, on SmackDown tonight. So,
yeah, oddly enough, SmackDown has been doing very well, is it? They got the best viewership of all the WWE products lately, haven't they?
Yeah, well, you know, being on Fox, they're the most visible. You know, while obviously everybody still gets the USA Network, you know, Fox is clearly the most visible out of the stations that their product airs on. So I'm not too surprised by that. And it is, from everything I've read, because, you know, I always try to read the results to see what happened and stuff like that. Everybody seems to think that SmackDown is booked and run much better than Raw is. So
do they actually have a different people booking those shows that instead of Raw, are the same bookers involved for all the programming?
No, I believe, you know, Raw and SmackDown are booked by the same, you know, head guys, obviously. You know, Vince McMahon makes the final decisions, but I think they brought back Bruce Prichard to oversee things before they get to Vince McMahon. You know, and then, of course, you know, Triple H runs NXT, so.
There does seem to be more legitimate wrestling based on NXT than their other products.
Yeah, I don't know for whatever reason or why it's like that, but it, you know, their stuff makes a little more sense. You know, who knows?
Yeah, well, we have wrestling on every night of the week now, so we can really enjoy ourselves, can't we?
Did you watch the second night of TakeOver when they aired it on Peacock?
No, did not. Did I miss a lot?
I knew, well, you lost the what's-his-name beating Finn Balor, but other than that, I don't really know what else happened. You'll have to go look it up now that we're done. Have a good weekend, everybody.